preternatural, and supernatural worlds that surround us. Here we delve into those topics that challenge us to think outside the limitations of realism, where we test the boundaries of imagination and are forced to think outside the confines and restrictions of what is normal. We are the creators, the writers, the artists, and the insane. Welcome to our weird realities.
Hey everyone, this is Hadley, and I am here for part two of the Sandman series breakdown with Mr. Rich Restucci, Joseph Hansen, and the one, the only, Stephen Landry. How are y'all doing tonight?
Excellent, thank you.
Very good, thank you.
Doing well.
So, on the wrap-up, this should be a very interesting panel, since Stephen and I are fans, and Rich, I believe you and Joe kind of were let down by the Sandman.
Now, hold on. Definite, absolute fan of the graphic novel, not the show.
Oh, I'm really curious to hear why.
Oh, I'll get into. Oh, man, I have 1,097 words on the subject.
Oh,
nice.
We can go there. The episodes broken down into very quick things. But yeah,
looking forward to your TED Talk.
it wasn't for me, Rich. Oh, I could drone on about this. So we're doing episodes 6 through 10 tonight. Episode 6, The Sound of Her Wings. Episode 7, The Doll's House. Episode 8, Playing House. Episode 9, The Collectors, which I thought was the best episode of the bunch, but still wasn't great. And episode 10, Lost Hearts, which just pissed me off.
Wait a second. Netflix episodes have names?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Go figure.
Mind blown.
I've got like really short things written up for these. And so episode 6, The Sound of Her Wings. Dream hangs out with his sister. I'm gonna call the dream guy Dream instead of Morpheus, because all I can think of is the Matrix when I hear Morpheus.
That's so true.
Yeah, right. Dream hangs out with his sister, Death, while she goes to work collecting souls. She's good about it, kind and warm. One part of this that irked me was the baby. There's a baby that dies in its crib, and immediately after that, this kid playing football, and he gets hit by a truck or a car or something. And it seemed at once sad and comedic, and it came off wanting to me. I did like the arc of Hob. He's a guy who was in a pub in 1389 and boasted that he would never die. Death and Dream grant him his wish, and Dream meets up with him, you know, in the pub once every 100 years. And Hob is very grateful for eternal life. Sometimes sad, sometimes wealthy, destitute, happy, dependent on his current fortune. And while I liked that arc and wished that they would have played it more, it still was a little flat, although it was the better part of that arc, because the death stuff for me was just,
you know,
just flat.
I will say I wish they had played that up more in the series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it felt so standalone and just one off ish that
it did. And honestly, it has more of a part than it has less of a part than it should have. They should have busted it out into a couple of other episodes, and he could have visited, you know, the pub with and met up with Hob in each episode, and they just kind of ripped through it in one, and it was kind of all at once, and it was just,
they also missed the chance to do some real foreshadowing with the pub.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
And all that as well.
Exactly.
Maybe it was Neil's way of saying, this is the novel I should have written.
I mean, maybe he could have done that could be its own novel right there. Yeah. I mean, he could have easily done that himself. And I like the way he inserted it in here. I just didn't. I wish there was more of it. That could have been an entire episode. It could have been its own series.
What if that is like, was like a backdoor pilot for?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been. Yeah.
Well, I felt like the endless were, they didn't have to be in this season at all. And it would have probably been better if they hadn't, because it did take away from the main story, it seemed like.
Kinda.
Death is my favorite character of the endless. I've always just been drawn to her. So this was disappointing for me in that level, is that I would have liked to have seen her have a bigger part in the whole series, but I'm hoping for season two for that to be.
It was an intermission, but it felt like an epilogue.
Hey, Landon.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. And there was definitely an air of finality about it. You're right.
And then the rest of the, like, the rest of the season really diverged from the graphic novels too in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it spun off. It did.
It was actually really interesting how tonally the show changed from the first five episodes to the last
five. Yeah, because the first, you're right, the first five episodes were, I don't know if I would call it spot on, but it was very close. And then it just went, it kind of went off the rails, you know, kind of like The Walking Dead did the same thing. It just branched, and Game of Thrones as well. They just kind of branched away. I think you're right. And I thought, you know, the first five episodes were, they were very slow, and I was really hoping that they would pick up, and they just kind of didn't. So, that's me. What did you guys think of this episode? Did you like it?
I still loved it, mostly because we finally got to see Death on screen.
Yeah.
And just the banner between Death and Dream. I really enjoyed that aspect. Like the emotional connections with the episode, with the people that they went and visited, mm-hmm. like just those little snippets into people's lives. I enjoyed that kind of thing a lot. So seeing it done in this artistic way was really cool.
Well, I enjoyed, because I think so many people probably are new to The Sandman, and Netflix is the first experience they're going to have with it.
Yeah.
And to see Death as a beautiful woman with a kindness versus the Grim Reaper, I think that's going to be an interesting going forward, how people will take that and what they do with it. But like I said, I was looking forward to Death. I was disappointed I didn't get to see more of her throughout the series, but it was nice to just have that little nod to her.
Fair enough.
And I didn't watch any of the last episodes. I just kind of increased my familiarity with Neil Gaiman through other means. And I'll tell you, this Sandman is not his best work by far. So,
hey, you recently read American Gods, didn't you?
I did, and I think it was brilliant. I really do. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt, and I went and picked up his first novel, which, you know, a lot of times if you find an author you don't like their story, if you give another one of their stories a chance, you might find something really, really good. And I did in American Dreams. So good that I went and picked up Neverwhere, which won all sorts of awards. And that's okay. But there's one more story of his I'm going to try, and hopefully he brings me back to the brilliant feeling, because American Gods, I highly recommend it. It's truly brilliant.
Well, they made a TV show out of that too, but I haven't seen it.
It's not, it doesn't live up to the book.
Yeah. I had heard that. I think you actually said that it wasn't nearly as good as the book.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about the show. So
I've only seen parts of the first season, and it didn't live up to the book, so
yeah.
It was a big letdown.
Did you read Neverwhere, Steven?
About The Sandman that really excited me is how it was more of a faithful adaptation to something that Neil Gaiman did, rather than having, you know, studios all over it. What was that, Joe?
Did you read Neverwhere?
I've read Neverwhere, and I've read American Gods.
Okay. What did you think about Neverwhere?
It was all right. It's not all right. One of my favorites, but it felt more like a really grown-up kid's book.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, it seemed like an attempt at planes or different planes of existence or tiers, but it just was too wordy and kind of fell short for me. What kind of stuff do you write, Stephen?
I write lit RPG. I write Portal Fantasy, basically, and progressive fantasy with survival horror and sci-fi elements.
Wow, I don't even know what that means.
He's got a lot of action, and it's an ever-building world.
It is. It's a lot of tension and a lot of monsters.
So, like, compared to something my age, like back in the 60s, 70s, like, is it like the World of Tears? Is it like the Chronicles of Amber?
Death Planet, Foundation, Dune, stuff like that.
Oh,
but
okay.
Scarier. Okay. More horror elements in them.
Sure. Sure. Sounds good. I'll have to look you up.
You definitely have Audibles, right? you would enjoy it. He's all over the map with the stuff that he does. And he also does graphic design too.
I do.
Oh, cool.
He's like covers and such. Gotta hate him just a little.
Quick shout out to SM Little. I've done the covers for his series. Since his first book, and recently redid the covers on another trilogy that he did. And it's been a lot of fun working on that.
Cool.
That's great. That was really good.
Now, are you doing originals, or are you taking the flip art and putting your own spin on it like most people do, or...?
It's a combination. I usually use stock images as like an underpainting.
Sure.
Steven, what's one of his books? Just want to look up the cover now.
I know Bloodshed.
Purple cover?
Yeah. I believe that's the most recent one I did.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it. The Hanged Book 3. It's a zombie novel, actually. Oh, very nice. I like the color.
You like zombies?
I do. I'm a big fan. Big fan.
So, Steven, if I was to go out and pick up something from you on Audible, what would you recommend I pick up of yours?
Stardivers. Go with that one. The others might be a little too...
My pen is gone. Damn it.
Too X-rated.
Oh, no.
All
righty then.
So Stephen Landry's books, guys. What are the?
Did you say Stardivers?
Apparently, he's got some hot, okay, spicy stuff going on there.
Yeah, I don't need anything interrupting my reading, so you know, stay away from the X-rated. I'll
give it a try.
Guaranteed a good time.
There you go.
Roger that.
All right.
Episode 7, then. What do you guys think of episode 7? It was called The Doll's House. Hadley, what do you think?
You've got a fan in the chat room there, Steven. Victoria Newton says, yep. Stardivers. Hell yes, it's amazing.
Excellent. Woo.
Now this was, which one was this? This is the one where they're, the Fiddler's Green and the Nightmare and, they're all escaped from.
Yeah. They figure it out. Yep. Lucienne figures that
this
out.
This is where it started bringing in, I can't think of her name.
Rose,
yes. Yeah. I started bringing Rose's story into it. It was really interesting to me. And again, it seemed like a different story than what we were originally into. But I did like the conflict that it introduced to the story as well. Mm-hmm. With you questioning whether Dream's right anymore. And he's questioning himself.
Personally, I just think he's a dick. Some of the stuff that he did. You know what? Gregory, right there. Dick. When he banishes Galt. Dick. I mean, he wants to take the baby. Dick. Come on. There's no need for any of that. He didn't have to do any of that. I mean, I guess he did have to do some of it, but I didn't want him to do it. So
He was having some issues, Rich. Be nice. He was in prison naked in a glass wall. All those people watching him.
That episode with Death, it was like he was trying to find his purpose again, and then he seemed like he kind of found it. And then, yeah, you're right. Like, the last few episodes kind of blended together, and he was kind of the villain.
Yeah, a little bit, right? And the thing is, he didn't need to be. And this dollhouse, this is where I finally realized that the Corinthian, who was just terrifying in the comics, he was just terrifying. He just wasn't going to be the terror that I had hoped.
He was a bit too comedic in the show.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, comedic is one way to say it, but he's not the least bit scary. He's just dirty and creepy. And the whole, this is what just killed the series for me, because I had such high hopes for the Corinthian and the collectors too.
Now the collectors kind of stunk. The collectors that did freak me out. Like, that was a little unnerving. A lot of the tension and the scenes that they had at the convention.
Right. So yeah, with the different rooms. So the scariest, when you really think about it, the scariest character in this entire show was that Funland guy. He was way worse than the Corinthian, and he's just so happy and happy-go-lucky guy. Yeah, I murder children all the time. I'm great.
Yeah,
there's a kid. Was that the guy from Cobra Kai?
I don't know.
I don't know, but if it is, it's really funny.
Someone needs to fact check this for me.
Well, I'm watching Cobra Kai right now. Not now, the second, but I'm in the middle of the new season.
So. I love Cobra Kai.
I know, it's great. My wife thinks I'm an idiot for watching it, but she's had many good reasons to think I'm an idiot over the years, so we'll just let that one slide.
The Funland guy, he's in Cobra Kai. That's got to be the same guy, isn't it?
I don't know, but I do know there's an actual, I'm just finding out right now, there's an actual Funland serial killer.
Oh, no.
Foreknown, span of crimes, 1985 to 2018, country Finland. Finland has serial killers?
Finland has Funland?
Yeah, apparently. He was caught May 6, 2018. Wow. I was just trying to look him up.
And, well, maybe
he's a real serial killer.
This could be a wrong person. I might have
missed it. What's it open for a month when it gets above 50 degrees or something?
Yeah, they fought off the Germans. Yeah, but this one.
I bet they serve lutefisk at the stand.
That's Norway.
It travels through the.
I misidentified. It is not. Paul Walter Hauser is the guy that's in Cobra Kai. So, my bad. Sorry.
It happens.
This is this episode. It's also, you know, where we started to carry on with Rose. Mm-hmm. We learned she's a vortex and how dangerous she is to the universe. She can harm or erode the boundaries between the dream world and the real world. She can also harm
that aspect
dream
of it. And, yeah. And I loved her grandmother. Her grandmother was awesome.
Unity, yeah, she was. She was great.
I do wish with the whole vortex stuff that they had just taken it a little further with like actual reality manipulation, like, and not just my best friend is magically pregnant.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is, I guess she got pregnant in the dream world and took it into the real world. So that's a little bit of manipulation. But you're right. If they had brought that further, I mean, the things she could have done, the power is endless. It's just amazing.
I mean, I feel like there should have been 2 to 3 good thing, like things shown to just show how powerful she was.
Yeah, and the damage she could do. I mean, when you were looking at that perfect house what was her name? Lita and her husband that they had. And all of a sudden there's this big crack, and then the crack starts to widen out in their meadow there. She was, and that was because of Rose. She was damaging, you know, I don't know, the ether of the world. It was just, it was a great aspect. It was just, it didn't go anywhere. It's just kind of, yeah, she's going to kill everybody and destroy the universe. Okay. She's not. And it was, and it fell flat. It fell a little flat for me.
Yeah,
you didn't watch it, right, Joe?
Yeah. I do agree with you, because in the graphic novel, she was shown more powerful.
My dachshund is a bit of an asshole, and he keeps barking, so I have to leave. It's just the nature of dachshunds. What can I say? You ever own one, you'd understand.
Hey, Laura.
Hey, Laura. So on to what is episode
8?
Which one was that?
It's called Playing House. This is where we really see, you know, Jed as a victim. Jed is Rose's little brother, and he's actually my favorite character after Matthew, the Raven. And we met Galt. Galt is a nightmare who we met in the. We didn't actually know she was Galt, but we met her in the episode before. And now we find out that she is keeping Jed sane by making him a superhero in his dreams.
I thought that was awesome, especially the way that they used pay homage to like the original Sandman comics, like where he was a superhero with like actual sand and Like that was hilarious and fun, and
it was.
It had a good vibe to it, especially when you look deeper under the surface of what was happening. Like that the nightmare was protecting him.
Yeah, and that initially he thought it was his mom, and then when they have like the two Sandman showed up, because his. The little boy, Jed, his hero's name in his dreams was the Sandman, and he had this little pocket of dust that, you know, sand that he could do things with. And they're about to, you know, Dream, who is, you know, the main character, he thinks it's kind of comical a little until he realizes that Galt, the nightmare, is actually playing Jed's mother, and she's been protecting him, you know, in his dreams by giving him this superhero aspect for, you know, a year or so, because his guardians are just terrible. They only want him for the money, and the father just beats him, and it was awful. So I like the aspect of it too. I thought it was pretty cool. There's an almost showdown between the Dream Sandman and the Jed Sandman. It fizzles.
It was like one of those superhero showdowns, but yeah, you're right. It did kind of fizzle out.
And again, Dream pulls a dick move and he banishes Galt. He's like, yep, to the darkness. It's like, wait, what? She was helping the kid. Like that, she gets saved later on, but right then you're like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, I agree. It was another one of those, what is he doing? Why is Dream acting like the villain again?
Well, and I'm going to say, I see everything that Rich is, you know, unhappy with, but to me, we're seeing the character grow, because there is the arc of, you know,
next Dream episode.
Him becoming more humble and more human, I guess, as a word. But you can see him at war with some of these things. I mean, do you go with the heart of the law or the letter of the law? And you can see he's still looking at how he did things so many hundreds of years ago, and things have changed now. At least that's the way I took it. That was my
interpretation. I think it's expectation, too, though. I mean, you hear Neil Gaiman, and you think that anything he does is supposed to be pretty good. And if it went to TV like this is, Netflix is TV, it's like your expectations are pretty high. And then you get on and you watch it, and all of a sudden you're seeing that, you know, I've got 5, 6, 7 different friends writing about zombies or war or this, that, and the other thing that make a novel a hell of a lot more interesting than The Sandman. That's why I had to go on and read more of his stuff, because I couldn't let garbage like that be the predetermination of what he
I'm glad you did too, because I do believe that he has something for everyone.
Yeah. He's an excellent writer. I think he's a fantastic writer.
And I would say that too. And why he allowed Sandman to go out is beyond me.
Well, this was a labor of love for him, wasn't it?
He's very proud of this.
Make this like 3 or 4 different times, and
he's very proud of this version of it, this Netflix version.
It took him years to find a place.
Either get him back on the drugs or off the drugs.
So I didn't hate this. I didn't hate the Sandman, but I couldn't like it. I'll never watch it again. I won't go. A lot of times I can kind of see that I'll like a film or a TV series if I watch it again, but this is just, it's just too slow. It's
way too slow.
It was like, I don't want to say pulling teeth, but it was too slow for me.
Well, this is one of the times
boring
that
murders. Come on, there's nothing to it. Sorry, I really was not a fan. I don't know if you picked up on that.
One of the things I think is so interesting about this is how we as authors visualize our babies versus how the readers actually interpret it. You know, because oftentimes it is very, very different. Mm-hmm. So
story.
It would have to be.
I definitely saw the season as two different stories, a part one and a part two with an intermission in between. And while part one totally met every expectation I had, like the second part with the vortex was great, but it still did all blend together. And I don't know if it was because budgetary reasons or just the way that they because I think they shot it during the pandemic, but I'm not sure. But it felt like there were aspects that didn't get fleshed out as much as others. And a part of that is Dream's behavior.
See, and I think you should have shelved this one for 5 years and then bring it out and rewrite it and add the energy, because it's just so lacking in energy.
Yeah. It is. I think he had done that a lot before. Like Hadley said, this was a labor of love. And he had done that a couple of times before. And finally, he's like, screw it. Let's just go forward with it. And like I said, I read an interview with him about this. And he's very proud of this. He was good with it. And, you know, as him, as the author, if he's good with it, I mean, as long as Netflix, you know, they're the powerhouse here. If they're okay, then they'll push it forward. And it's getting mixed reviews. But I think more people like it than dislike it.
Now I do think it.
Minority.
I think it ended on a very high note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there were things
to be in the minority in things like this. Of course, I'm not a comic book guy either. Yep.
Fair enough.
First. I don't read comic books. Haven't read any since the original version of Archie, I think.
You might not like Stardivers then.
I read a lot of science fiction and a lot of fantasy. I mean, I am a Lord of the Rings buff. That's kind of what I write now. So, you know, I'm not close-minded to the absurd. I'll write about elves and gnomes and fairies, and that doesn't bother me. But comic books, once I started reading regular books, comic books were done. I was done with them. I was moving on. Don't
Fair
judge
enough.
Me, Rich.
I'm Don't not judging you at all.
I felt it.
Judging? We're judging. Landon and I are judging. No.
I've got a special place for both.
Yeah.
Well, I think that when you have a series based on subject matter that is so loved by so many people, there's certain things you have to put in there or people are going to be disappointed. And that's where I go to, like, the brief interlude with Death. People would have been pissed if she did not show up in this season. But I don't feel like it was a true meeting of her. It was just, like,
again, I think if they had saved that for the end, for the last episode, that would have been, had such a bigger impact.
I think you're right, Steven.
And then people would be talking about like a Death spinoff and stuff like that.
Oh, here they come.
But one of the other things that I constantly wonder with when talking about the Sandman is, could it have actually worked as a novel versus a graphic novel? Because it is such a visual medium, like, and it's such a visual story.
Oh yeah, absolutely, it could have.
But yeah, but it was initially presented as that too. So that's, I mean, it's a good point. I don't know, but once you've sort of ingrained something like that, once you sort of you see that it is like exactly what you said, a visual depiction of something. Trying to go the other way is difficult. You can always turn, you know, a novel into a comic book, but turning a comic book into a novel is tough. You're right. I don't know if that would have worked.
It would take a special writer to do that.
Yeah, we should find some special writers.
There you go. Special writers. Hey, you said you were at Dragon Con. Is that what I hear?
Yes, I was.
See, I used to go to the Walker Stalker and set up a booth. Did you ever go to that?
I've been to one of those, yeah.
We were at the last one and they canceled the whole show on us in Tennessee, Nashville, like the day before, and we were already there in our hotel room, you know, the old Fallon Express guy. So we just set up in the lobby of the hotel and gave away books and still claimed it as a tax write-off. But an author I'm trying to get on my show was there, Craig Allenson. Did you meet with him?
I did, Craig Allenson of Expeditionary Force.
Yeah. Have you read that series?
I have.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good.
Well, Tony is saying
we actually have the same audiobook publisher, Podium. I have a deal with them.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Yeah, I'd like to get Craig on the show. I'd like to get R.C. Bray on the show, too, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, R.C. Bray's
lately, everybody's been saying no to me, so it's okay. I'm used to rejection. It happens.
Tony is saying that this week that Sandman surpassed Stranger Things in views. So...
I read that something about that earlier. It has over 200 million watched hours.
That's pretty good.
I haven't watched the new season of Stranger Things. I'm waiting for winter for that.
It's pretty good.
I like Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's very well done.
You know, there's a lot of good shows out there. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Undone.
No, I haven't, but I've heard about it.
That's kind of half animation, half, and that's very good. But there's the little creepy lawyer guy from Breaking Bad, in it.
Better Call Saul.
Yeah, him. I don't remember his name, but I like him as an actor. Yeah, so. So Neil Gaiman, he has a lot out there that's gone to video, sounds like.
Successful fella.
Yes, he is. Another reason not to like him.
get him on lowballing.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. I'm happy with who I've had on lowballing so far. You know, maybe we'll have Steven on or, you know, but I mean, Tufo, that was a good show. You were there that.
That was fun.
You know, and John O'Brien, I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
I love John O'Brien's work.
Yeah, oh, John.
Yeah. So.
You got a good show with Lowballing. We need to
If I can get people saying yes, it'll be good again. You know, I read this one guy like a couple weeks ago. I picked up a couple of his books and it's, M.R., I don't know, Taylor Forbes. Or something. Forbes, that's it. Forbes. And I read some of his work, and I really enjoyed it. So I reached out to him and asked him to come on the show, and he's a recluse when it comes to social media, and he's doesn't want to go on camera. And,
I'll send you some stuff, and then I'll come on the show so you can roast me for it.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
It'll be a good time.
It's a fun show.
Do you ever go on with your picture, Steven, or just the avatar thing?
It depends on how I'm feeling.
Are you afraid to have people see you? I mean, you sound like a very, very handsome individual.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jennifer. Doesn't he, Rich? I mean, you got to admit, he sounds like a good-looking guy.
Oh, yeah.
He is a good-looking guy. I was thinking of picture.
I have not seen a picture. I got to look him up.
Steven, that's one of the reasons. Steven, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but we're live on Twitter, so if you want to share it. Yeah. But he's very active on Twitter, I think, more so than Facebook, aren't you?
I am.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Boy, he comes complete with a hat.
Oh, there he is.
Couldn't ask for more than that.
I was just going to look you up.
More than that. Well, with me, you, and Alan Gamboa, you're bound to be the best-looking guy in the room.
Can't stay on camera too long, you know.
Yeah, you don't want
that air of mystery, Steven. Yeah. We understand.
It's a witness thing.
give the world just a taste and let them suffer after that. Isn't that how it works? Yes, it is.
So, Joe, sure. What are you working on right now?
Me?
Yeah.
I am working on trying to get back into writing. I've taken a hiatus from writing all summer long, which is really weird because I got a book to 70,000 words and I stopped writing it. I sent it out for a couple of developmental edits. So I'm trying to get I built a shop in my backyard, which I plan on doing a lot of work out of there. I used to own a sawmill and I made furniture and hardwood flooring and casing and base, and so I'm going to have a small wood shop out there, do refinishing and things like that. Then I'm going to store my boat out there, and I'll also get Wi-Fi so I can run the lowballing program and just kind of have a little den out there where my wife and I can hide away the minute-long Minnesota winters, and because we really don't have an area for hobbies right now, and winters get to be pretty brutal. So we'll be out there. It's heated and has AC, so we'll be spending a lot of time out there in the future.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, I'm real excited about it. I'm about ready to take pictures and post it.
I was just gonna say, grab us some pictures when you can. I'd like.
I probably won't. We'll see. We got a lot to get done this year, but I probably won't be putting the outside siding up until next year. The way the scheduling's been going, and plus I'm waiting to get approved to have a hip replaced. So I'm not moving very fast either. You know, some days I'm out there with a cane. Other days I'm not, and anything that gets two feet off the ground, my balance is shit. So it takes three times as long. So, you know, but we're getting there. Keep plugging away, and pretty soon it'll be done. And then I'll get back to writing. I got two novels I want to do, and the third one that I have to do, and then we'll see where we go from there. I mean, that'll be close to 20 novels out there, and we'll see what happens.
That's nice. Yeah.
I feel like a slacker.
Why?
How's that third book coming?
Everybody's got, like, so many, and I have, like, two.
That's two more than most people.
You got to remember, I'm 61, and I've been writing for 30 years. You're what, 24?
Yeah, I'm 24. We'll say that. Yep.
I didn't start writing until I was 45.
She's been writing for 6 months and she's already got two novels out. She's going to smoke my ass.
Well, I think that Joe's got some work out there that really needs some recognition. That Splinter book is so freaking scary. I had to limit myself to reading it during the day. I can't listen to it on the recorder at night. Yeah. I usually go to sleep listening to books. I can't because it keeps me up. It's so scary.
That's the book that leads into what I used to call Zombie Rush, which is now canceled and is part of the No Man's Land series. So it goes Splinter, and that leads into the next four books, and then the next four after that. So it's a 9-book series that's complete. And that's Devil Dogs Publishing. Yeah, Splinter is where it all starts. Before there was a Columbine, there was Ricori. Cold Spring, Minnesota, there was a school, and Ricori is just an acronym from all the counties that share this school.
Right.
And it's in the town of Cold Spring. And it was the first of these schools to have the high school shooting, you know, where kids went in there with guns and started blowing people away. And then there have been several other bad things that have happened in Cold Spring. And it's really too bad because it's a picturesque little town on a river and a lake. And it's just really beautiful. But they've had cops killed and all sorts of bad things. So I figured it was a good place for the worst demon the world's ever seen come back to life. So I used a Sog from ancient Mesopotamia. A Sog was written in clay. The story of him, the only story they have is a poem. And he was defeated by a demigod. Otherwise, him and his rock demons from the mountain would have came down and devoured everything that was agricultural. And this was actually a poem that was written in the beginning when the Tigris River was just forming. So it's thousands and thousands of years old. And it was the first religious reference I could find anywhere. And it's about a demon and his rock demons that were coming down to destroy farmers.
It broke my heart because the evil dog in it is a cattle dog.
Yeah.
And I look over at Boo Bradley and I'm like, oh shit. He's thinking in there. What's he thinking?
Ask him.
Cattle dogs are a tough demon. Yeah, and so Assad goes on. I mean, you don't see him too much in the next four books, but after that, Assad plays a pretty big role.
Yeah, I read the Zombie Rush books and did not know about this book.
I wrote them individually because, you know, I'm from a family that has very short-lived men. Men in my family don't live very long, and I was in my 50s, and so I wrote each group as its own series. That way, if I kicked the bucket, it could just stay out there, you know. But and then when I signed with Devil Dog Press is when I pulled it into the series it was always intended to be. And it goes through a series of genres, you know, that Splinter is absolute horror. And then you got the Zombie Rush, which is, you know, fast-paced zombie-style horror. And then the book after that is called Gone to Dog, and I actually take it 130 years down the road. And I wrote it as a Western, you know, because technology has pretty much been, you know, it goes through its own apocalypse and everything. So the last four books are written as a Western. So it's interesting and it works. It works. I don't have many readers of it, but those who do read it are pretty impressed. So
now, Steven, we'll see where it goes. Tell us more about your world that you're writing in.
I mean, I have a few. I have two finished series and then two that I'm currently working on and then one coming out next year. So one of the first series that I finished was an adult horror fantasy series called Vampire Sorcerer. Then I also have done a young adult series called Temple of the Storm, which is about elves, of course. Elves fighting demons, fighting monsters, fighting the undead.
What kind of book?
A lot of fun stuff in it.
Is that X-rated?
No, that one is not X-rated.
What's the title of that one?
Temple of the Storm.
Is it on Audible?
Yes, it is on Audible.
I'll get that one. I'll pick that up tonight. As long as it's longer than 4 hours.
I believe it's 9 hours and 40 minutes, something like that.
That's perfect.
And cool. Then I'm still working on my sci-fi survival horror lit RPG. It's a mashup of all kinds of genres and basically just...
what's the name of the
X-Rated? And Salmon, what's the name of your X-Rated books?
Vampire Sorcerer.
Let's click on her picture in a larger face. We want everybody to see it. Yeah.
Calm down, killer.
Engagement.
And I like weird stuff. So, like, all my stuff goes very weird. Like, Stardivers is a mashup of classic science fiction, video games, and basically a little bit of everything.
But that's kind of what I did with Wayward Son. I kind of made it as a, it's kind of a cross between Quantum Leap and Clockwork Orange. So, you know, it's I like weird too. I like offbeat.
Yeah, it's stuff that's not really considered right to market or anything like that. It kind of lives in its own little place.
That's, you know, and there's a good reason for that, because if you look at the cult classics, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, you think that would have ever made it in a brick and mortar store? You know, that had to come out on film in order for it to be, you know, as successful as it was, you know. But these cult classics are those are the ones that people remember. And you're not going to get that by writing the 9-to-5 type of stuff.
I agree. And then as the series goes on, it ends up taking place more on a post-apocalyptic Earth that's about 30,000 years into the future. Oh. So animals and everything have mutated because of viruses and different... can't really say anything more without giving some major spoilers.
Well, don't give away too much. I mean, if it gets too good, you'll be the next L. Ron Hubbard. So,
yeah.
So, Rich Restucci, what are you working on?
Oh, I actually started up two more projects this week. I'm still working on the seventh book in the crossover series of Run and the Theories. It's pretty much the fifth series book. I still get that. I had about 60,000 words in that Vampire Tank Commander. There's a World War One landship, and the commander's a vampire, but I cut about 45,000 words out of it. I just didn't like where it was going, so I pretty much started over. And picking up, I had written a
Vampires are so much fun to write, aren't they?
They're easy. They're fun. They are. But I wrote a story for an anthology a few years ago, and it was called Gloom. And then I wrote two more stories that fit in that world. And I'm actually going to turn that into a novel. And that's about creatures that can come out of shadows. And it was well received, so I hope I can kick that up a notch. But I just started up the Sasquatch story again. That's been on and off for years. I've just been, it's about 60,000 words now though. So I should just buckle down and do it and kick it out. That's about it for me.
I always refer to those shadow type novels as gray man novels, you know.
Gray men?
Gray men, yeah. Because that's Wheel of Time and Gray Men were the ones that always, you know, intimidated me. And
I just read a good book about people's shadows. I'll have to tell you about it later.
People's shadows?
Yeah, like they could be detached and used for evil.
Oh, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was a very interesting book. It's a new writer that I'm following, but they're mainstream, so I won't mention them here. It's Andy's drive. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it for us. But overall, did y'all really enjoy? Well, I know Joe and Rich didn't. Steven, did you really enjoy The Sandman? Would you recommend it?
I did, and I would highly recommend it. The last part of the season is a little bit rushed, but the final episode and the bonus episode with all the cats are well worth the payoff.
Yeah.
That was my dog.
Someone's dog was drinking.
That was Delta.
I will say that the bonus episode really got me. I probably enjoyed it the most out of all the season, to be honest.
It's okay, baby.
I was excited for it, but turned it off kind of at the beginning.
Yeah.
Bag of cats in a river. I'm out.
Too sensitive.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was hard to watch the bonus episode. It was definitely pulled at the heartstrings.
What are we talking about?
I'd save the kitties. And I'd get rid of him.
There was a bonus episode for the Sandman series, and it was an animated episode about cats. At least I think it was about cats. Like I said, I got about 15 minutes in, and I turned it off.
What was really wild is I have a cat. Why wouldn't and during that episode, my cat sat in front of the TV and watched it. And I don't know if that's just something because of the way they did the sound or something more sinister going on there, but... It was a pretty cool moment.
It was worth watching, Rich. It was worth watching.
Well, I suppose that already happened. I already know it happened.
You saw the bad part. You saw the traumatizing part. Yeah, exactly, Tony. But definitely worth watching.
The thing with Sandman's wife was very. It was pretty. It was devastating. It was hard to watch.
Yeah.
It was tense.
I don't think I watched that one. I watched the cats, and then I think I turned the next one off just because I left.
Did he kill her?
It's a lot to explain.
Okay.
No spoilers because I haven't seen it. So.
Yeah. No spoilers. If you watch anything, watch the cat episode and the episode that comes after.
All right.
The cat episode was good. It was a cartoon. It had some traumatic stuff at the beginning, but as we said, it does clear up. Oh, I will. I didn't realize that it went on. I think I just forgot about it. But all right. Well, that's up for our hour, and I hope that Stephen will come back and spend some time doing more panels with us. I enjoy having him on.
Yeah,
Stephen's probably definitely miss Sylvester, who is under the weather, and Mike Evans, who had a previous commitment. But we definitely want to see Stephen back.
And me, who just comes on and fakes it.
I believe that I'm going to be back for doing some House of the Dragon panels.
Ooh, Alan took over House of the Dragon for me, but I have a lot to say. I'll be sitting on that panel.
What is House of the Dragon?
That's the Game of Thrones prequel.
That's a what?
The Game of Thrones prequel on HBO or Max. It started on the 21st.
Yeah,
it's about the Targaryens.
Yeah. I haven't watched any Game of Thrones. I did read 5 of the books, but, you know.
Books are fantastic. But yeah, it's X-rated. The books are fantastic. But I'll tell you what, once you, when you're reading those books, first of all, they're all, 2000 pages, but when you're reading those books, it's really difficult to keep the characters together, to keep them together in your head. You know, this guy, and then you're like, wait, which guy is this now? But once you watch the show, each one of those characters, you can now visualize who that is. And you can say, right now I get it. Because sometimes I would mix things up when I was reading that.
Halfway through the third book, I thought all the Starks were dead, and they kept turning up more of them.
Well, Joe, I will say the series is very good until the last season, but if you go that far, you've got to see it all. But people who I know who aren't into movies or TV, they're big rednecks who like to hunt, they've watched Game of Thrones 4 times, the entire series. Yeah. It's that good.
I don't have HBO, and that's why I didn't watch it. I would have watched it, but I think it's on other things now, but I just haven't searched it. I am watching Wheel of Time when that comes back on, and a lot of people criticized that and said that was garbage, but I enjoyed it.
I thought it was all right.
I mean,
I'm going to support anything like that that's put out.
Well, and
Lord of the Rings is going on right now, too.
Yeah, but, you know, people don't understand that trying to convert some of these novels to film is virtually impossible, you know. You'll never get the magic to flow right, and, you know, then the long scripts are going to be shortened, and, you know. But I'll support them, too. I'm with Adley. Who else here with Adley? Raise your hand.
My hand is raised.
Good man, Stephen. Good man.
All right,
we'll have you on low balling sometime, Stephen. Stephen?
What was that?
We'll have you on my show, Low Balling, sometime where we talk about writing.
Sounds good.
All right. Sounds good.
We'll set something up.
All right. We'll see you.
And if you're not familiar with Joe's show, you can go to our website, www.weirdrealities.net, and there it has a Low Balling with Joe page, and you can find all of his videos that I could find uploaded there. So be sure to check them out all in one place. The one that's, I think, featured on top is going to be the Mark II film one, but DJ Moles and some other people are below it, and it looks like sooner or rather than later, we're going to have Stephen Landry on top, too. So, Thursday night, you can catch me and Rich. We're going to be talking dystopian movies with Alan Gamboa and Scott Baker.
Hey, you're talking Clockwork Orange. I saw that. One of my favorites. Oh, well. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Well, you'll have to give me some tips on talking about that, because I was not a fan.
Really?
We'll talk about that on Thursday. But thanks for tuning in, guys. As always, we appreciate your support, and we love to see y'all in your comments. So we will talk to y'all soon. Until then, stay weird.